8:30 now at News Talk 1400 KFRU, and in the studio is the Chancellor of the University of Missouri at the Columbia campus, and that's Brady Deaton. We always appreciate when he has time to join us. Good to see you, sir.
David, good morning, and it's good to be here.
I jokingly said as we came in, wow, how a year ago, later on February 1st, it started snowing, and you did something very unusual at that point in time for the next, I think, two or three days, because Wednesday was February 2nd. You had to call off classes at the University of Missouri.
You know, perhaps that was an omen, David. It started a year of unprecedented decision-making.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because you know what? A lot has happened since then, hasn't it? Because right. You've gone through the conference change, tuition problems, and we're going to talk about today. A lot of other things have happened in that last year.
It's been a very eventful year. Really has.
What a story, though. I mean, you could make a great book out of that. And I encouraged you last time you were on a couple of months ago. Maybe you should write a book. And you said, well, you do keep notes, but you're not going to write a book about this, at least not planning it in this time.
All right, now.
I want to start off with something that will get us talking about cost and budget. There was a story that was run, it was early in January, almost exactly a month ago, and it has to do with Missouri being on a list of Kiplinger Magazine's 2012 list of the 100 best value public colleges in the country. Now, Truman State made that, University of Missouri made that. I brought this up just because I think people need to realize that still things are happening good with the university despite very tough economic times. I want to read a paragraph and get your response to this because it plays right into what we're going to talk about with budget and increases in tuition. One paragraph from the Kansas City Star story on this particular issue. MU, which admits nearly 85% of the students who apply, has a graduation rate of 43% after 4 years and 69% after six. The average student aid received by MU students is more than $7,100, and graduates on average leave with more than $22,000 in debt. What do you take from being ranked as a best value from Kiplinger? I think that's a nice compliment to trying to hold costs down low.
It really is, because it recognizes the effectiveness of the faculty, basically, and staff of this university who've devoted themselves to ensuring quality learning communities for our students and learning in a learning environment. So, yes, it is. And at the same time, it says, you're working hard to keep costs down, as we have been, and the data, of course, is very clear on that, I think. And it is a compliment in that regard, but it's one of those danger signals. You don't want to be so economical that your engine stops running, as in an automobile.
From what you know, as far as what aid comes to students and grants or financial aid, and what debt a student takes from the University of Missouri, is it about average? Is it better than others?
It's about average. It may even be a little better than others. Our tuition is lower. I just was looking at data. It's lower than the AAU Publics, our peer group in the AAU. So Association of American Universities. It's lower than the Big Ten average tuition. It's lower than the Big 12 average tuition for just the public universities, and lower than the average in the SEC. So we are a bargain, and the quality is there. I mean, that's why we're a member of the AAU. Our research scientists continue to do great work. So it's good. We want to be prudent, though, and we want to be responsive and responsible to the parents who send their students here. And the growth in demand for the University of Missouri from quality students across this country is just a great, great exemplar mm-hmm. of the brand, the quality, and the kind of degrees and what that means in today's market.
What I'm about to say now, some days I think more of than on other days. For example, I happen to be married to someone who went to University of North Carolina. So we get emails from them talking about what's happening with their tuition. They're going to raise tuition, at least they're proposing an increase of the tuition there that would be a 55% increase from the current rate over the next 5 years. That's 11% averaged out over the next 5 years. Saw an article in either New York Times or Washington Post talking about Cal Berkeley, a public school in California that's dealing with pricing themselves out of the ballpark for most students who at least now have had a chance to go there. So I look at this, those are two sides of the country. That's so it's happening across the country. Some days I think, you know what, we should thank our lucky stars we're not looking at those kinds of numbers. But then other days I wake up and I realize that people who are students here or who are going to be students here say, I don't care what's happening at UNC or Berkeley, I care about what's happening here. But the bigger picture is bleak.
That's right. It's a reflection of the very difficult economic times we're in. And it's something we have to address as a nation in the bigger sense. Education, American higher education, has been one of the great examples of leadership in the world. It's been one of the great exports of the United States abroad as international students come here, particularly for graduate education. But more and more, those other countries are building their own critically important areas and institute research institutes and areas of higher education and competing with us. And that's a bit of a danger signal from a geopolitical standpoint. And we economists will long argue, as I will and have my entire career, that investments in education is one of the greatest investments you can make. And we know that, and we have to really wake up to that. I may have told you already in a meeting recently I had with Vartan Gregorian, head of the Carnegie Corporation, when he said, you know, we taught the world the value of education. They believed it, and now they're moving in that direction with double-digit economic growth in China and India, while we here in the United States are going in the other direction, as though we don't believe it anymore. And some of us are just pioneers on that, and it made the difference in our lives. It's made the difference for our children, and we want to make sure we ensure that for the future.
All right, I'm thinking of an article that I read. I have it right here. Thomas Friedman, the columnist that is syndicated, he writes for the New York Times. He wrote a column called Average is Over, and he was basically talking about how you can no longer expect to go out into the world with maybe a high school education that might be average or an average preparation for the world, and it speaks to what you're talking about. You better be ready to produce, because guess what? We're being, and this is not new, we're being replaced by automation. I mean, it's happened in my business. It happens in factories. You have to be prepared to meet what will give you a living and make you a productive participant right in the society beyond just the average.
Absolutely. If you look at the future job markets, the rate of growth for jobs requiring advanced education is growing leaps and bounds. And we don't want to see ourselves slow down and struggle. I think it's very important for the state as a whole, and I've tried to make that point in my discussions about the budget situation we're in today. This is a really critical economic and social issue for the state of Missouri. And you know, compared to the universities on the coast that you were talking about a moment ago, we still are really committed here in Missouri to public access to higher education, to the land-grant mission. But we haven't forgotten that. We're going to be celebrating the sesquicentennial of the Morrill Act this year with displays and events here in Missouri as well as Washington, D.C. and most states of the nation. And that says something very important for this democracy. It says any individual that aspires and has the intelligence and dedication for higher education ought to have access. We're trying to ensure that access through keeping our tuition as low as possible. Yet we need a partnership in this, and we don't need to go backwards to where we're just having private higher education in this country. That's the way we started as a nation. But we learned as a nation we could not continue down that pathway with just a few private, usually church-related institutions. We had to broaden that and make a public commitment to it with the Land-Grant Act in 1862, the Morrill Act.
More recent than that, then we're also thinking about how some of our fathers were able to go to college and break a tradition that they couldn't do in their family because they served in World War II and then got the opportunity for the GI Bill to go to college.
Exactly.
So there are other steps along the way that made it possible for people to understand the importance of higher education.
The GI Bill was a very excellent example of just that same philosophy. And then, of course, due to the Sputnik of Russia in the late 1950s, we had the National Defense Education Act, NDEA, that created National Defense Scholarships for students to study because we realized we were falling behind in technology. So we made a big surge. That was another, not as important as the GI Bill, actually, and some of these other acts, but still very important in terms of what it took to really reinfuse a sense of commitment to public education.
And that's the point. I mean, it was a commitment to public education that came from public funds, oftentimes. Brady Deaton is our guest. He's the chancellor at the University of Missouri and the Columbia campus. So in the conversations that you have, like the one you mentioned a moment ago, do people think about how did we get here? How did we get to the point? It would be an easy explanation to say, well, we went through some rough economic times. I understand that, rough economic times, but in the state of Missouri, it even happened at 2000 under Bob Holden when the cutbacks. Was it just because the revenue to the state wasn't there? Are there broader issues that have said, I don't know if there's a certain anti-intellectualism or other issues that are there that are causing less funding or revenue to be used for higher education?
Social commentators would analyze this differently in different ways, but certainly there perhaps is a bit of anti-intellectualism that's been seeded in the rhetoric, political and social rhetoric of the last few decades. that may be damaging this. There's certainly a commitment to no new taxes. I mean, you hear that so much. When in fact, you know, what's so bad about saying we need new taxes, as we're saying here, I think, with our school system today, because we need these things. I don't know why we would shy away from doing those things that we really need to do. We have to have taxes and revenues if we're going to fight a war or be strong or do what we did in the late 50s when we saw Russia getting ahead of us in the race for space. So these are, we need roads. We had the interstate highway system, you know, in the 50s built. I mean, these are vital aspects of infrastructure in this country, and we've always believed that public education fell within that. So we want to try to keep that as an honest, open discussion and not a rhetorical or partisan discussion. This is not a party situation at all. I think it's important that the business sector particularly recognize the strength that they need in the workforce and be a voice for public higher education in this country. And I think that's fallen away, quite honestly, in the last little bit. And I think that's regrettable.
Let me flip this then and say, be critical of the institution which you serve or the larger area of higher education, because many books, many articles are being printed right now saying, guess what? Wonderful background history of higher education, but right now it's just not producing what we need to produce. It is stuck in old-fashioned ways of teaching or old information. What is your response to those kind of critics?
Oh, you know, I look at it very carefully and analyze it. And in fact, I've done that throughout my career. And that's led to my role in trying to lead an institution to continue to make the changes that I've seen faculty and institutions make through the years. There's no question that universities are large, complex institutions. But the notion that they haven't changed and responded to the times, I think the data will not show that. In fact, I think they're the most vibrant institution in the world, one of the most vibrant institutions in the world today. And it's not fair criticism, as we see so often, someone to say, oh, we're still teaching the same content we taught 30 years ago. Well, if you're teaching principles of mathematics, I hope you're teaching those, you know, maybe in different technologies. And there's no question that technologies have changed. And I read a recent article by Lawrence Summers, president of Harvard, on that. And I looked at it, and, you know, certainly I respect Dr. Summers very much. But as I read it, I thought, well, yes, the University of Missouri has been doing this for a couple, three decades now. When I was in the classroom, David, over 20 years ago teaching myself, I was piping in the best experts in the nation into my classroom. It doesn't even take new technology. You dial them up on the phone and have them speak over a speakerphone to your class. So if I'd read a great article by someone, I'd just call them up and say, hey, I've got my class. Can you take half an hour and talk to them also? So his point about getting the best thinking in the nation, of course, we should all be doing that. We should be using all the latest technology, all the innovations in learning. And I'd say we're doing a far better job of that today than we were two or three decades ago, because we have the ability now to pull on so much more information. His article was quite good in pointing to the fact that we have so much access to more knowledge, and we should be focusing on the ways in which students learn. And we've had path-breaking research here at the University of Missouri showing how different groups of people in different circumstances learn in different ways. Mm-hmm. And we've infused that into our entire learning communities. Our freshman interest groups are just one of the examples of that. Service learning is another example. The involvement of our undergraduates in our advanced world cutting-edge research is another one. We do this all the time. We use the latest technology. We have our students out learning in experiences abroad or in learning experiences down in Joplin, Missouri. These are things that are at the very heart of what the University of Missouri is doing. And it's why we like to see these publications that say we're one of the great universities for low cost. We're a bargain in higher education because we do a world-class job of educating, and we do it much cheaper than the average of most of our counterparts around the country.
I appreciate your passion on this, and we're going to take a break, get a couple of announcements. We'll come back and continue our conversation with Brady Deaton on News Talk 1400 KFRU. We have Brady Deaton, who is the chancellor of the University of Missouri Columbia campus, in the studio with us, and Now, your role in a Board of Curators meeting is as a presenter of information for the campus at Columbia and a perspective there. What is it that you'll be doing over the next couple of days when the Board of Curators meet in Kansas City?
Well, we are very active. All the campus chancellors, the four campuses of the university, work with the general officers, the vice presidents of the, at the system level to provide the agenda, the research, the campus perspective that goes into materials for the board to consider. So the board has all that. And it's their meeting. We sit right next to them in case more information is needed about our campus. And then we help interpret information and arguments as the board itself is deliberating. They often turn and say, well, is that what's happening at Columbia? Or is that different from one campus to the other? So we're there, ever present, watching every aspect of the discussion as a resource. There are some board meetings we say very little, and others we say more. We're brought very much into the discussion, usually when the committees are meeting on Thursday before the formal meeting on Friday. And then there is a part of the board meeting in which the chancellor specifically addresses a specific set of issues. And in this case, it's a panel discussion on economic development. So we'll do that Friday morning.
And the role of the university in economic development?
Exactly. What are we doing to promote the state of Missouri through our programs related to economic development? There we touch on the classroom. We touch on the critical research and technology transfer we're doing. And we focus on what our extension education may be doing to work with governments, with the private sector across the state. Last year, for example, we've documented that our extension business, Small Business Development Center, which is principally federally funded, by the way, created over 6,000 jobs in the state of Missouri and led to about $200 million in investments.
That will be part of the Board of Curators meeting, but of course, media is going to focus mostly on the conversation about raising tuition.
Right.
We hear every year about the difficulty of trying to finance higher education, and we hear that the state is giving less, the tuition may go up, and goes up in smaller rates sometimes. Can you tell listeners who say it seems to be the same song every year when this happens, but what has been, I don't want to use the word damage, but what has been the impact and the effect of less money from the state and trying to make up the difference with tuition, but even tuition can't cover the decreased funding from the state? What impact has been directly, could you directly attribute to that, that has caused at the campus?
Well, what has caused the campus level is a significant reduction in the faculty that we are hiring to educate our students. That concerns us greatly, and we're working with our deans across the university to try to manage that and make sure we're doing an effective job and continue to through the mix of types of faculty we hire. That requires us to reallocate. As we're doing that, we have to be concerned about the research obligations we have as well. Because that means you can't, if you're teaching too many classes, you can't write research proposals. And as a major research university, our nation, the world, you might say, depends on, and the state depends on our ability to undertake that research. So we've had to defer. We say defer, meaning we hope it's not permanent. So we defer hiring. We've deferred maintenance and repair and the physical plan of the university in amazing ways. We're probably $500 million short of where we ought to be in keeping the quality of the infrastructure of our campus up to date. And those are real costs that we will bear one way or the other down the road. And so we slowly chip away, as we did with the total renovation of Tate Hall and Switzler by some creative financing over the past year and a half. And that led to improvements, but it took squeezing everything we could do just to make those. And we know there are many more we need. We defer travel, or we actually restrict and cut travel significantly. And this is very critical travel that we need to be doing to keep our faculty abreast of the latest thinking in some cases. Or in some cases, it's critical research meetings, critical educational meetings that enrich what we're doing and move us down the road of what Larry Summers was talking about when we were talking about earlier, and making sure we can adopt the latest innovations and learning technology. So we defer travel. We find efficiencies such as reduced energy use, and we saved about $1 million this past year in energy conservation. So we take every step we can to automate the regulation of the thermostats. We make it a little warmer in the summer, let it be a little cooler in the winter. We've done that. We've adjusted our thermostats. And in many other ways, more significant ways, our students have been so responsive as they've looked to promote a more sustainable environment. They've helped us clean up, and they've done some things that really save the university money. And that's why, we allocate about over $50 million in part-time work for our students. They help us, and it helps us get the job done more inexpensively while providing work opportunities for them. We also attract private funds. We continue to, when we find a real problem, rather than allocating money to address it, we try to find a donor first, a private donor who can step in and help us, you know, in the kind of fundraising that we do. And then we try to generate more revenue through the auxiliaries, through the bookstores, and the various ways in which we serve others. Our nuclear research reactor, we provide core research facilities now that other universities, including the University of Kansas, draws on for some of their critical cancer research.
When the governor made his proposal in his State of the State speech a couple of weeks ago, and he said, I'm going to cut higher education. Now, the number is 12.5%, but I've seen some articles that mention it might be realistically a 15% cut. Can you help clarify the difference there?
Well, what's proposed for us right now is 12.5% reduction. There are a lot of, because there was a decline in the federal support that the state was depending on, and there's questions about how much will the governor use of maybe the rainy day fund or other parts of revenue, and have we really counted the Medicaid impact, for example? I think that's one of the factors that may have driven it up toward the 15. So there's a lot of unknowns still, and that's sort of a best first cut that we're looking at. And as the legislature grapples with this and we sort through it, and the governor's staff sorts through it also, that figure could vary a bit. But
it seems like it's mobilized, or at least made some people to cut their attention, and now at least the representatives and the senator in this area that are truly representing mid-Missouri, they've become active about speaking, saying we need to do something, we need to hear from a lot of people about their concerns of this. Does the state understand the same concern level, those who are not close to maybe an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours away from Rolla or MU or St. Louis or Kansas City?
Well, I think it does vary some. We've had outstanding representation in the state at both the Senate and the House right now, and we're very happy about that because they do understand, and they've articulated those concerns in a very effective way. And of course, with a university, the size and importance of the University of Missouri here in Columbia, I'm sure that those individuals feel a great responsibility. Now, I believe that the representatives and senators throughout the state are getting much the same message, because this is affecting all the four-year institutions across the state of Missouri. So I would expect you'd have to go a ways before you'd find people that aren't looking at this issue.
Your situation right now seems to be this. The governor is saying we're going to cut if he has his way, and he said that realistically we're going to have to cut the funding for higher education. And then he says, but don't raise tuition to try to cover that cut.
Right.
The president came out and said last week something to the effect, we're putting colleges on notice that you can't assume you'll just jack up tuition every single year. If you do try to go with a higher tuition, which I think the board is probably going to consider over the next couple of days, then it has to be approved because of the rate that it would be asking for, and right. Risk the further punishment of saying, well, you know what, you asked for too much, so instead of giving you less than what you were going to get, we're going to give you more less than what you were going to get. That's a tough situation to be in. I don't know how you manage in that situation.
It's a tough situation, and you know, basically we'd like to see a partnership here among all parties. This is not where we should be pointing fingers and blaming people. I would point out in the president's speech, he did say his assertion was, or his admonition to us was based on the states stepping up and doing their part. And so what we're having across the country, of course, is the same rhetoric at all levels, but neither group stepping up and providing the funds that we need.
The state beat him to it because
That's
the
right.
state a week or two ahead said, we're not going to step up and do it, so they're going to find some other way. I jokingly said yesterday in a promo for today that you have to be a magician. I don't know how you wave a wand to make this happen. Until it becomes very clear to people that there are some significant effects of continuing to reduce a budget.
Well, and that's where we are, David, and I appreciate the way you've cast that, because we're at a point where the alternatives aren't clear at this point. If we could cut two or three things and save the day, we'd be jumping to it. And in fact, what we've proposed to our Board of Curators is, if we could get a 7.5% tuition increase, We'll commit to total of about $8 million that we'll find a way to defer other things and cut additional costs by about $8 million. That's a sort of a pledge we've made as part of this partnership. But that's still, even the best we could do there, and is going to require about a 7.5% tuition increase. And you know, depending on whether there's any salary increases or not, then those numbers can vary a great deal. And if we went, in fact, What we proposed, the 7.5%, was it would require that actually a total of 9% or so in reduced expenditures that we would have to undertake. That did not even consider any salary increases.
Well, we've come to the end of our time on the segment, but this is a real tough situation. I mean, it's not being exaggerated, true or false. I mean, you're going to say true to that, but how do you get that message across to all the important people?
We're working very hard. My staff, and I have to give credit to all those who do so much work. We worked all Sunday afternoon, for example, just trying to find a framework that would enable us to take these important steps to keep that tuition as low and to keep Missouri still one of the great universities of the nation, offering a quality education.
It's good to talk to you, and we'll see you again, I think, sometime next month. Thanks, Chancellor.
Thank you.
Chancellor Brady Deaton on Newstalk 1400 KFRU Columbia. How